Today in the studio, folks, as always, I got a real treat for you. Serial entrepreneur, venture capitalist, Derek Fay.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
What's cracking?
Visiting my friend here in Vegas. I hooked up with Josh, my friend here, having a good time.
Now, you've been serial entrepreneur for about 20 years, yeah?
Yeah, since 2002 anyway. You could argue probably back to more like 13 years old before I really started making money, about 2002.
But what were you doing before that?
So I called myself intermediary venture capitalist, which clearly is not a thing. But as a young boy, even when I say young boy, but maybe 16, 17 years old, coming from humble beginnings, to say the very least, I was always very good at connections and communications and identifying people that had money. And I knew everybody that didn't have money. And so I would very simply connect these people. And it started really small, $1,000 for me, $5,000 for me. That just started to really grow as I got into, say, 18 years old, 19 years old. And by the time I was 22, I was the venture capitalist.
And how important do you think relationships are?
Everything. Absolutely everything. I built my entire career on meeting people, shaking hands, making connections, and living up to my word. So I would say it's paramount.
Well, the last one, living up to your word, that's how you keep relationships. Not necessarily how you make them.
Fair.
If someone's listening to this, because I obviously preach relationships, how do they make them? What's the best way to make relationships?
Get out there and shake hands, like to oversimplify. You know, my favorite thing to do now, still today, is I always sit at the bar. Why? I sit at the bar and I talk to every single person that I meet. Everybody's got a story. So for me, that's always been my go-to, and I teach it to my daughters. I say hello to every human being that I meet, whether I'm in a grocery store line or when we get in the Uber. How you doing, man? How's your day going? Everybody has a unique and genuine story, and for me, I've always taken great pleasure in making those connections, and so it's not a complicated process. Stick out your hand, open your mouth, be genuine and caring, and relationships will come.
And that built this, I'd call it a career, right? You built, yeah. According to this, you built over 30 companies, all of which were exited in the 7, 8, and 9-figure ranges.
Correct.
Did you build them from scratch?
The ones that we're speaking about there, yes, from the ground up.
How many did you have?
How many did I have?
You just build and sell, build and sell, build and sell?
So combination of two. So yes, my goal always is within a 1 to 5 year period to sell, although the company I owned the longest was 12 and a half or 13 years. Simultaneous, and still today, I invest in smaller companies, scale them, and exit. I'm an unemotional businessman. It doesn't mean that I'm not emotionally involved, because you have to be, but I'm very good at recognizing when my trajectory is at its peak and getting out and leaving something on the bone for the next buyer, which I think is really important when you're looking to optimize your exit. So the answer is build from the ground up, invest in non-industry specific. I'm a cash flow guy. Doesn't matter what the industry is. I am not an expert at anything, but I'm lethal at a lot. And so I'm really good at providing fundamental, foundational support for entrepreneurs and or businesses, and hiring the experts or supporting the entrepreneurs that have got the company to that point, scaling very quickly and getting out at a really exciting exit multiple.
So if you guys want to follow the dude at Derek Fay, DERIKFAY, just so you know, or DerekFay.com.
Agreed. Thank you.
So you've been out there for a while buying and selling businesses.
Yes.
Why not just, I always ask myself, should I build another business? Because we were just talking about the real companies that I'm building.
Sure.
Like I'm building them all from scratch again. Mm. I built this place from scratch. I was listening to, I think it was Dan Pena the other day. And he's like, why would you need to build it if you can just buy one that exists?
I agree.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, dude, I started thinking about that. Like, yeah, why ain't I buying them? They already exist.
Right.
They already went through the brain damage. Cause dude, to get Lightspeed up and running took me almost 8 years.
100%.
Listen, of brain damage.
The company that I was in for 13 years was dirt up. And there was a reason that it took 13 years. There's also, on the other side, a reason why I can get into a company and get out in 3 years with massive ROI. And that's because, like you said, it's already cash flow. You've already got a foundational team. You've got an operational partner. And so you're so far ahead, very little debt involved. So for me, I love building companies from the ground up. But my preference always is to get into a company that already exists. And I prefer tenured companies. 5-10 years old that have maybe even the owner thinks that they've peaked. So I'd rather have a warm company that has demonstrated 5 years of success than a company that is hot and on fire, because it's a snapshot, right? Doesn't matter whether the balance sheet is perfect, debt to income is great. It's a snapshot. It's not a trend. And so I'd rather go with the trend over the snapshot and build on that.
To me, I'm thinking, I just look at cash flow.
Like 100%.
The cash flow in terms. The rest I don't care about.
Agreed. So people say to me, what do you do? I say, I buy cash flow. In a sentence, I buy cash flow. 100%.
Yeah. And there's a lot of businesses out there that'll believe it or not, let you buy their business with their own money.
You can acquire meaningful companies with almost no money.
Well, I had someone come in here one time and offer me $40 million. And I'm thinking, you know, $40 million, yeah, that's pretty nice chunk of change. So I'm like, you know, so how does it work? You know, I started to entertain the idea. Sure. And basically, they wanted me to sign the piece of paper. And within 1 year, they would give me $1 million. And then within 3 years, they will give me an additional five in stock and this, that. And I'm like, no, dude.
That's a mess.
Like, where's the money? Like, that's upfront right. money to make a deal.
That's right.
They said, well, there wouldn't be any upfront money. And I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? We just jacked around. So you could basically tell me to give you my company and then let you give me $1 million out of the money it's going to make you? 100%. Why wouldn't I just keep it and take the million and still have the company?
You'd be surprised how many people accept that offer.
Dude, that's what I'm hearing. That's yes. what this Dan Pena teaches is how to go buy companies with pretty much just terms.
Terms.
And I'm like, dude, listen, if there's any businesses out there, you know, you're tired of operating your business, you want to exit, call your boy Brad Lee. I am buying companies. Now, I want to vet them. I might even bring you in on some. You want some?
I'm in on everyone.
Okay, folks, listen. If you guys want to exit your company, we'll come in there, especially with terms.
Terms all day.
I like it. I mean, I'm thinking, damn, I'll buy houses that way too.
We'll give you $100 million as long as the company earns $200 million over the next 5 years.
Yeah, and I've seen people with houses with equity in their houses mm-hmm. basically just hand their house away because they didn't want to lose it to a bankruptcy. And I'm like, there's equity in the house. Why wouldn't they just go get that equity? And you know, that's what they're saying. I don't know. I'm like, dude, like there's opportunity everywhere. No one's looking.
It's crazy. So Hurricane Ian just occurred in Southwest Florida where I live. And there are big waterfront properties. I mean, $4 to $9 million worth of value that were completely wiped out. Now these are affluent, seemingly intelligent individuals. They are giving away the land and assigning the insurance claim for pennies on the dollar. Why? I don't have the answer. I'm asking. The human condition is ridiculous. When things are emotional or when they hear big numbers, people act so irresponsible. And that's why I say to anyone that's selling their company, it doesn't have to be me, but your average broker does not know how to facilitate a sale. Because it's such an emotional process for most people, and someone that knows what they're doing, not can, will take advantage of that process.
What are the things I'm supposed to be looking at if I want to exit a company?
Your number one thing for me is EBITDA, right? So a lot of brokers will come in and they will leave certain add backs, meaning things you can add back to your EBITDA. EBITDA, you know what it is, but EBITDA meaning the actual money that you earn, earning before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. So you can drive that number up by taking costs or profits, I'm sorry, and pushing it down into your EBITDA and driving that number up. And sometimes it's as much as 30, 35%.
Now, how do you do that?
It's very simple. So for example, let's say you're taking a salary of $150,000. So that's a cost that drives your EBITDA down. That goes back into your bottom line. It drives that profit back up. So just on 150,
that's an add back.
That's an add back.
Yeah.
Right. So even at 150 grand, depending on your exit, that's 7X to 10X, depending on your company. That's a lot of money left on the table. And so a lot of these brokers aren't doing it. And there's no rationale other than they're not educated.
Yeah. So let's say this company here is doing 5 million EBITDA and we're taking 2 million during the year. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that people will not add that back to make it a 7 million because my salary won't be necessary. My gross. Ferrari won't be necessary. This building wouldn't be necessary.
That's right.
Because again, you don't, I don't need all this to run this company.
Of course you don't.
Sometimes I try to like educate people. Like if I shut down, I make more money. People are like, what do you mean? Because we license our software. Mm-hmm. The system's not going anywhere. It's already built.
That's right.
Right. I do keep it advanced and developed, but I wouldn't get rid of any of those people. So when I say shut down, I mean, no sales, no production, no studios. No, I'd get rid of probably $600,000-$800,000 a month in bills.
100%.
And all that revenue would still come.
That's right. So if you said,
because all that's to grow.
That's right. So if you said, I want to sell, I'd say, we're going to wait 1 year. You're going to drop all of the expenses that you can drop. We're going to stabilize that new profitability and then you sell. Now you can add it back.
Over a period of a couple of years, you mean?
No. Stabilization, max 12 months. Max 12 months.
So if I cut the bullshit for a year,
yep.
Then say, and then let that happen for another year?
Mm-hmm. So no, one year. So simultaneously, you're cutting your expenses over a 365-day period. Those revenues are still coming in. So your EBITDA just organically is going to go up, whatever that is, 20%, let's say. So that would be my advice, although it's not necessary. So depending on the total EBITDA, if you're 0 to 1 million, 1 million to 3 million, 3 million to 5 million, 5 million to 10, there are different parameters, different expectations, and more importantly, different buyers, right? So based on the value of your company, you're in a different situation, but there are still some really important nuances in sales. And I can confidently say, because I've done it many times, as I did to you before we went on the air, is get your valuation the day you're ready to sell. I guarantee you I will sell it for 10 to 25% more, guaranteed. And if I don't, then I don't get a penny.
What do you get if you did?
I'd probably take 20% of the upside.
So you just make yourself 20% on the sale.
Well, actually, I made you 80% extra.
Would you kick me back 10 of it?
I kicked you 80 already.
No. What do you mean? Did you find the buyer? 80
of the upside.
Did you find the buyer? Oh, you mean 20% of the upside?
Of the upside. Oh. Absolutely. Not of the total. No, that's not fair. Listen, I'm not greedy.
So you're telling me if someone came and said, I'll give you $40 million, Brad, and I say, Derek, and you say, I got you $50 million. You want $2 million out of the 10.
You got it.
Shit.
Yeah.
Deal. How do you, why do you think you'll get that? It's just from all the deals you've put together?
You listen, I can sit here and talk about all of the magic and the financials and all, but the truth of the matter is there is a technique, there is a presentation, there is a sizzle, and there are specific buyers, and you have to know how to approach certain buyers. Look, at $40 million, there is a certain pool of buyers. And just because someone can afford to buy your company doesn't mean they're the right buyer, right? And so, yes, experience in selling, knowing who to go to. And honestly, if you were really serious about selling, we would immediately start teasing the process, meaning you and I would say, here's five buyers that we really think we want to target. We would start sending financials and the offers would come and we'd say, we're not really interested. We just want to let you know that at some point we are going to be on the market. And then you just stop and you would be amazed at the strength in doing that. Cause you know, hey, look, these PE firms, these private equity firms, they have to spend money. They have to. They're irresponsible. They spend too much as a rule. And if you know how, you can take advantage of it. And I say this because every company I sold for more than it was worth. 100%. 100%.
Well, that'd be my goal.
As it should be.
Me more than it's worth. Why? Because I built it for the last 22 years, dude. I want paid.
Damn right.
And not only that, I truly believe, I don't think I could sell it for more than it's worth. I think it'd be impossible.
No, I think I could though.
I don't think so.
Well, because
it's worth in the billions and you're not getting me billions.
Fair enough.
They'll look at the books and they'll be like, you know, why would we pay that much? And I'd be like, well, because if you knew what if you guys could run this thing correctly, it'd be making billions. Like I'm succeeding in spite of myself.
Fair.
I haven't even people come in, what's your marketing? Like, we don't really do any marketing. Never have. All word of mouth type shit.
But you're the marketing, aren't you?
Well, I mean, that causes some phones to ring.
For sure.
Me, the brand, Brad Lee. Right. But, dude, this is 22 years ago. It was door knocking, dragging a dead horse. And, it was hard to get it cranking because I was ahead of our time. But now, dude, I'm telling you, if somebody came in here and operated this and put in a real marketing team,
yeah,
it would be huge. You know, like Kajabi, who's supposedly our competitor, which they're not, but they just got evaluated at $2.2 billion.
Wow.
They raised $550 million. See, someone over there knows what the fuck they're doing.
Private company?
Over here, I'm like sitting here fucking wondering, you know, someone asked me one time, hey, how come we didn't ever raise any money? I was like, no one ever offered any. I didn't even know how to go get any.
Well, we can have that conversation too.
Yeah. Well,
it's remarkably easy.
What would I do with it? I got enough money. I can hire anybody I need to hire. The only way I would borrow money is if we were going to scale like beyond what I can do.
That's right.
For a purpose.
Yep.
But then I'd borrow. And we got stellar credit. That's another thing, man.
I borrow everything.
You know, we pay bills within like 5 seconds of them showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that shit? I keep telling my accountant, you're supposed to drag that out until they almost get pissed.
I don't disagree. Hold your cash.
If you
work for you.
I don't know if you know a guy by the name of Keith Cunningham.
I don't. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, we just did a virtual training system with him. Oh, Keith Cunningham. It's called Keys to the Vault.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4-day MBA. Any entrepreneur on planet Earth should go through this course. But he basically, you know, showed us that our cash flow went way up just because he said, in reality, he's got a software that showed it. We pay our bills, our owed bills within 7 days, and we take an average of 39 days to collect our money. He said, you want to reverse those.
Yep.
And we started working on reversing them, you know, which basically means, you know, you push the payment due until you wait till it's due.
Absolutely.
And then some. Mm-hmm. We get the invoice because I always thought, you know, I want good credit. Pay those some bitches. But I was wrong. Anyway, long story short, we reversed them and our cash flow almost doubled.
But isn't it miraculous how little tweaks in business can make such a massive difference?
Yeah, but what's crazy is most people don't know that. So there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are building that have no clue of these things.
Well, listen, the whole educational system is broken. There's no financial education. And what is taught is 100% incorrect, wrong, false, and honestly sets you up to lose.
Now, your social media, you're posting content all day, mm-hmm. giving tips and tricks. What is it? Entrepreneurial?
Yeah, it's entrepreneurial. Listen, for me, I've had a good run. And recently I've had a lot of really young, exciting entrepreneurs that I've been investing in, and I'm seeing the problems that you're talking about, right? They're pouring themselves into misinformation. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to use platforms like this. I have nothing to sell. To just give real meaningful information that can be taken, implemented, and make a difference, right? Actually bridge that success gap that we were talking about.
I've got a DM after DM that basically wants me to mentor young entrepreneurs, and I don't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that?
I do, actually, yeah. I've been doing it for the past 10 or 15 years, just now more publicly. There's nothing that gives me a greater joy, and I think it's because coming up, I didn't have a mentor. I really didn't have any support. I mean, I come from a place where there's very little cheerleading, very little support. And so now that I'm in a position where I can help, it's very meaningful to me. And it's actually, look, I'm busy. I'm running a lot of different companies, but in any given day, it is what gives me the most joy out of my day.
Hmm. Well, maybe I'll start sending you these people.
Absolutely.
Because I know, I mean, they're willing to pay too. It's just like, what am I going to do? Like, now I got to go worry about your business? Shit, I'm still worried about my business.
Well, here's the good thing, Brad, though. You know, things like that do lead to opportunity, right?
Oh, so for sure.
And it's happened to me at least, 15, 20 times. Young entrepreneur DMs me. I talk to him. I'm not charging you anything. I'll review a contract. I'll give you advice. Don't do that. That person's trying to hurt you. And all of a sudden, oh, by the way, what do you do? And it's an amazing concept. And I say, you know what? I'm in. I want to invest.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you there's deal flow everywhere through 100%. That medium.
Yeah.
It's just when people ask me, do you coach, do you mentor? I always just immediately go, no, not really.
Yeah.
But I fling them to people that I know do. So sure. if you're one of them, I'll start forwarding you those.
Yeah.
Now, how do you know Mr. Denny?
We met just by happenstance, right? I mean, I think we met on social media.
We met through a mutual friend. Or
Perez, or, yeah. Maybe Tony.
Tony, who Ben Notini.
That's right, Ben. Okay. So through a friend of a friend of a friend, right? How it often happens. So I was involved. Company asked me to be their CEO, which I do from time to time on short periods of time. We'll call it a shadow CEO or face of a company, just to kind of get through a turbulent time. And so I met a young entrepreneur who I immediately connected with, bright, hungry, good person, good vibes. And he connected me with Josh, by the way, one of the greatest human beings and genuine people I've ever met in my life. And we've become fast friends.
Everybody I know that knows him seems to say the same thing.
Listen, if you tell me you don't like Josh Denny, there's something wrong with you.
Eh?
That's it. I know that to be a fact.
So what's the biggest payday you ever got?
One check. 52.2.
Nice.
Yeah.
What'd you do with that?
I spent some.
Did you go live it up a little?
I got to be honest with you. I didn't. And so it was in, it was only about 2 years ago. And you would think that a payday like that would make this massive difference. But for me, I was excited about it. It was a great transaction for me. But the next day I was back to work. It didn't change my life in any way.
Gave you more horsepower, didn't it?
It did, for sure. And I'm not going to say that it wasn't a confidence boost, right? This was a company that I'd built over a decade. So it was meaningful from that standpoint that I took something from dirt and turned it into meaningful money. But it didn't change the work ethic. It didn't change what I wanted. It didn't give me any more financial security, which I was really surprised about. Because going into it, like, an offer's great, LOI, quality of earnings, all the stuff leading up to a sale is fine. But I've been through that process the day up to the sale, and the money doesn't come. So leaning into it, I was apprehensive, and then it came. And I don't want to not say that $52 million was an exciting process in my life, but it didn't fundamentally change anything for me.
Did you already have millions in the bank?
Well, that's a part of it as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not as fun when you already got tons of money.
Well, listen, let's go back to my first big payday. So that's more meaningful.
Yeah, what was your first big payday?
Listen, this is a deal that I talk about all the time, and people seem to love it. And it was $5 million, and it took me about $70 to create it, and I did it in about 20 days.
Damn, what kind of business was that?
It wasn't a business. You want me to tell you the story?
Yeah.
So I'm 21 years old, just moved to Florida. And like I told you, I'm out shaking hands. In fact, I think I bought like a $3,000 plate dinner to see George Bush at the WCI house. I didn't know anybody, and I bought the most expensive suit I could buy, and I'm just meeting people. So I meet these two top realtors at WCI, the largest real estate company in the country at the time, now defunct. And I invite them out to lunch. So they pick me up, we're on our way to Naples, Florida to have lunch. They get a phone call. Hey guys, I can't hear the call. So they get off the phone and say, hey, do you mind if we make a quick stop? Of course. We pull into this apartment complex. They ask me to come in, so I go in. And what they're doing is the owner of the property has about 305 units, and they're converting them from apartments to condominiums. And they're asking these top realtors, not just in the background, asking these top realtors, how many do you want for your buyer? What do you want? We're going to make about $150,000 per unit. Boom, boom, boom. So I'm sitting there, just taking it in, go to dinner, come back to the house, do a little research, find out that in Florida, you have first right of refusal if you have a current lease. So what do? I draft letters that says, great news. Your apartment is going to be converted to a condo. It's going to be an amazing opportunity. Highly suggest you do it. If you do not, I will give you $1,000 in relocation if you assign me your rights. A couple of days go by. I get hundreds of people assigning me their rights. The owner of the property goes crazy. We're going to sue you. I said, you can't sue me for anything. I haven't done anything. And long story short, they call me up. What do you want? And I said, I'll take $20,000 a unit and I'll give them back to you. $5 million. And I didn't have to give the tenants $1,000 because I assigned it back to the landlord, so he had to give it to him.
So what was the $70 for?
$70 was the cost to courier the letters to each of the people's apartments.
Huh.
That's it.
And can you do that again, ever? Or is that just
I hope
once
so.
In a...
I hope so. I mean, listen, that's one of those things where
How'd you know? How did you know? You just did a little research?
Just did a little research. It literally took me 25 minutes. I knew that I had heard something that was important. I knew there had to be a way to monetize it because no one else knew about it. And there was $150,000 per unit profit. So I pursue everything. I take every meeting. I take every call. I say yes to opportunity because even if I know the deal's no good, I do know that it could lead somewhere, a contact, an opportunity, education.
But somewhere you're going to have to run into FOMO.
Maybe.
Well, you have to because I'm the same way as you.
Yeah.
And like lately I'm like, dude, I got to start saying no. Like,
no is it's a challenging thing to do when the quality of deals that we see come to us. But I agree.
Well, I mean, well, I'm not into those quality of deals. I get some deals, but most of them are just jicky jack some bitches.
Listen, the ratio for me is probably similar to you. But listen, I enjoy the process, right?
Yeah, some of them just want to show up because, 100%. Oh, I've been following you for 2 years. I think you're so funny. I just want to see if you were like you are in real life.
Like goodbye.
Yeah. All right, dude. Thanks, dude. See ya. Like, fuck, dude, I got to start saying no. I had to be here. My schedules are jam packed because I got to fit everything in and I'm like getting tired of it.
Sure.
And so when you were saying that, you know, what you were saying, that's what I used to think. No, and I still do think it because when I say no, it bugs me because it's like, what if that's the one?
And it's not,
but it never is.
It never is.
And I even told Maria, my assistant, I told her from now on, anybody wants a meeting, ask them if there's going to be a check involved. Like, is there a check involved? If there's no check involved, well, then don't put them on my calendar.
You know, you're going to get 1,000 DMs. They're going to say they have a check for you now.
Dude, I will fucking book them all. I'll book all those. Dude, listen to this. The other day I was on a podcast, some dude named Ryan Pineda.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was on his podcast and I said, listen, I should do a shadow day where I'll, you know, charge $25,000. You can come hang out in my office. You can sit right in my office and listen to what I'm saying and, you know, ask questions and hang out. We'll go have dinner and call it a night.
Yeah.
Two people have DM'd and wired me money.
Wow.
I told Maria, you know, book it. She's like, what is it? I'm like, it's called a shadow day. She goes, what's that? I said, they just get to sit here and listen. Shadow. She goes, well, you're busy on this. I said, it's a shadow day. You don't have to clear it.
I'm just going to do what I do.
I'm going to do what I do. Like, look, I'm going to start doing that every... Folks, anybody wants a shadow day with the old B-Meister, 25 dimes, let's go.
Let's go.
You can sit there and listen. I'll introduce you. And
you
by the way,
the same thing for me if you'd like.
Hey, and let me tell you something, dude. Smart people will pay that 25 dimes.
You're absolutely right.
If they know what they have is good. Because again...
That's right.
People ask me all the time, how do you get in the rooms with all these, you know, influential people? I say there's two ways. Number one, you become one. You become influential, then you can get in those rooms.
That's right.
Or number two, you buy your way into those rooms.
That's right.
I know people that have paid, you know, VIP tickets just so they can be in the VIP parties. Next thing you know, boom, they're making deals with the big 100%. Wigs.
That's exactly
and they make
right.
way more money back. And other people are like, you're stupid. You paid 10 grand. You're only two rows in front of me. And they don't think... Dude, it's not that. You're buying access.
That's right. And maybe that person's going back to the VIP or whatever that is, but you're 100% right.
Yeah. And on the same token, you could show up for a shadow day with me, hear me bust a couple jokes all day and not have anyone come in here because it was just a freaking regular old day. Then you leave and you're like, what the fuck? Well, you better come prepared with some questions at least.
There it is.
Come with some questions because I could answer some questions. I bet you could too.
See, that's such a great point. I've had so many people sit in front of me and say, what should I do? Well, I mean, if you don't know, who should I ask? So your point, like you ask some questions, have some substance. Like you and I have information. Josh has information, but we can't just spill it out at you. Some of it isn't going to be meaningful to you.
You gotta show up prepared.
That's right.
Too.
Yeah, what do you want to pull out of this?
Well, I give people a lot of opportunities and they'll show up and they don't even know what the fuck they want.
Correct.
And I'm like, well, let me know when you do.
But isn't
it
crazy?
Thanks for coming in. Remember that time we were at that it was like a speakeasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, I'm going to come out with my breast spray and two people bought in right on the spot.
Yep.
You were going to, yeah. but it was like a good idea. So these two people bought in.
Yeah.
I gave one their money back.
Money right then.
Huh? Yeah. Right on the spot. And one I gave his money back because I never really did it. And the other one disappeared.
Yep.
That Chinese guy,
right.
I don't know. How much did he give you?
Just 10 grand.
I mean.
But I mean, he disappeared.
Well, no return policy.
What happened to him?
Oh, he's gone.
Well,
it's a good reason.
Hey, but listen, when I come out with my breast spray, and I will, I'll give him his piece. Because he didn't want his money back. The other one he's not out yet. I'm like, dude, I got businesses. Like, I'm going to fucking run out and worry about a breast spray. He was bothering me. I'm like, here.
Take it back.
We're good. And then I don't know. I'll ask you about this other guy when we finish this. But there's another guy that I know that I've heard some shit about. Like, you won't believe what I heard.
But isn't
now,
it shocking?
Now the bomb squad is going to be like, what? What'd you hear?
What is it? Tell us. Isn't it shocking, though, how many people have no idea what they want in their life?
I'll tell you what it is. His name's Brett Knutson. You heard of Brett Knutson? You know who I'm talking about? Apparently, he just got arrested by the FBI. He was on the run. Apparently, he was, doing inappropriate things. I'll say allegedly in case there's a lawsuit involved. But allegedly, he was doing inappropriate things with his wife's children.
Ugh.
And I'm like, dude, there ain't no coming back from that.
No.
That's I don't play that game at all. Yeah. Like, come on, man. That's worse. That's worse.
That's the worst.
Yeah, like Balenciaga.
Right.
Like, everybody's freaking out about Balenciaga. Rightly so. Like, dude, those ads, they were not an accident. Those were intentional. Those were extremely intentional. Now, Balenciaga's trying to act like it was an ad agency. Dude, Balenciaga could sue them for $1 zillion. Dollars. They know.
The two-print process has got so many layers of approval that it wasn't missed. It couldn't have been missed. Once, maybe. But like you said, Balenciaga, why are they not suing destroying that marketing company?
They were, I did a little research on that one. Dude, they had, it was obvious. They were trying to do that shit.
It's crazy.
But 800,000 kids go missing every year and nobody says anything. It makes zero sense to me.
Never hear about it.
Like, even the milk cartons are gone. Remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fucking milk cartons are missing. Like, it showed the missing kids. The milk cartons are missing now.
They're gone.
what the fuck? But we shouldn't be messing around with that.
Agreed.
Have you turned into any kind of philanthropist?
I have, yeah.
Because I figure once I cash out big, I'm gonna go out and be a philanthropist. And for some of you dipshits that don't know what the word philanthropist means, it basically means that you're giving, you give money.
Well, luckily you don't have to
or be time. You don't have to be money. It could be time.
Agreed.
But a philanthropist is someone who gives. I think.
Yes. Well, luckily for me, I'd have to be able to spell it to actually do it. I've quietly donated millions of dollars over the years, and I say quietly because of where I came from, real poverty. I always had a real problem with taking publicity and fears of how it made those people feel. And I'm not saying that it's wrong when someone's standing there and giving a family that needs money a check for $10,000 and posting it on social media. They're doing it. Fantastic. It's not my MO. For about 10 years, I had a national 501c3 charity called Around the Clock Caring. And so what I did was I bought single family homes in the communities that I operated and made money. And I placed abused women with children. They lived in my homes for free. And I gave them the life skills they needed to get out of their situation. So job training, mentorship with me, classes, drug abuse, whatever it was. Because money is never money doesn't solve the problem, right? There's so many underlying things. People think money makes things better. I've learned the hard way with my family that the more you give, the lower they go. And then when you stop, you're the asshole.
Right? Well, some cases, but yes, some cases. Most cases I would agree with.
In my case.
There's some cases that's not necessarily true. Fair. Like in my case. Like if some motherfucker would have just gave me some money, I'd have put it to good use.
Well.
Nobody ever gave me anything.
No, I'm in the same boat, believe it or not.
So when you said you came from a poor background, mm-hmm. How poor?
So I was born to a single mom. We lived in the projects in Rhode Island, Section 8 housing. She didn't have a job.
Food stamps?
food stamps. My biggest concern in life was whether or not I was going to eat. And we had a conversation last night. There were some olives, and I will never eat an olive again in my life. And the reason is 3 or 4 nights a week, food was so scarce that dinner was an olive on each one of your 5 fingers. And that's what you had for the day to eat. And so it's funny how those things leave an impression. So when I say poor, I mean poor, poor, abusive, poor in every way you can imagine, right?
Yeah. I don't mean to laugh, but I just thought of a joke when you said that.
Shoot, what is it?
Well, when I was a kid, I was so poor. My dad had to, you know, he didn't have any money to buy us Christmas presents. So he just cut a hole in my pocket so I'd have something to play with. He was creative, at least. No, but we weren't
I'm going to retell that, by the way.
Yeah, but we weren't that poor. You know, we were blue collar,
yep,
low income.
Sure.
You know, but there was always food. We always had food. I'd get home and there'd be shit in the fridge to eat. Matter of fact, I used to be a very, very short kid. All the way up till about 9th grade, I was short. And I came home in the summers, from school, and I started chugging the milk. I hated milk for the longest time. Then I started loving milk, and I started chugging milk. And as soon as I started chugging milk, believe it or not, I don't know if it was the milk, but dude, I went away one summer, came back. I'm standing in the high school and someone runs up to the crowd we were in. And they're like, dude, has anybody seen Brad Lee yet? I hear that son of a bitch is huge. And I look over and I'm like, dude, I'm right here. And they're like, holy shit, dude. So I grew like, you know, 7-8 yeah, inches in a summer.
And so you're
from drinking milk.
You sponsor milk now?
No, but that's the only
paid ad.
That's the only thing I started milk? Doing was drinking milk right out of the carton. But that goes to show that like we had food.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't rich. We didn't go on vacations. Nobody bought me cars. Right. You know, we had Christmas gifts. What do you call that? Low income.
I don't know if I want to say middle class.
Like my dad worked his balls off. Your mom didn't work at all. She had no job.
Not for a long period of time.
So that, and it was single mom too. So that makes it even harder. How did you have brothers and sisters?
Two half brothers, sister and brother.
So all of you hungrier than shit.
Hungrier than shit. Yes.
Like, see, what about Christmas's time or holidays will come around when you didn't have no dough?
Yeah. I mean, what you would expect, right? Not very meaningful. Christmas, you know, the pitch was that it's about family, right? When you're that level of poverty, honestly, not getting a gift is not really your biggest concern. A, you never really got one anyway. And B, again, you're hungry, you're worried. You know, as a child, I was worrying about how do I make money to help this situation?
Yeah.
Like as young as I can remember.
You know that a lot of people would consider that lucky.
I do in some ways as well.
Yeah. Well, again, you talk to some people, they're talking about that is lucky. Like in other words, you were fortunate to grow up that way.
It changed
my
life.
You were fortunate to have that hardship. Yep.
I agree.
So do I. I think that's where the good perspective comes from. Mm-hmm. Like I used to bitch about the socks I'd get for Christmas. Like fucking seriously, socks? I can't get a fucking BB gun or something. Right. You know, but I'm not as, you know, hard faced as you were. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I would be already exited if I were.
I don't know, but I do agree that it definitely, not just for me, anybody in a similar situation, it changes the way you think, it changes your priority, it creates a hunger in you that never goes away. And this is true, I will never not be that poor kid from Rhode Island. I still wake up most mornings and the first thing I do is look at my bank account, which is ridiculous, but it's one of those things.
Why?
It's an asset and a liability.
But what do you think could have happened overnight?
As I said, there's no rational thought to it. It's just a process that I did growing up every day. I wanted to focus on wealth. My only goal in life was to be wealthy enough to not have to worry ever again. And not just for me, by the way, for everyone around me, right? And I learned some hard lessons coming up with that thought process. But that it never goes away. It's an asset and a liability. It's an asset because even still today, I'm as hungry as I was when I had nothing. It's a liability because even still today, I'm as hungry as I was when I had nothing.
Where do you live?
Naples, Florida.
Naples, Florida.
Yeah.
A big fancy house or no?
Yes.
Are you frivolous?
I'm not. No, I'm not cheap. I like to enjoy life. I like to spend my hard-earned money on my family and my friends, on experiences. I'm a car guy. But outside of my home, which is certainly not frugal, and my vehicles, which are certainly not. I don't spend a ton of money on myself, but I love to go out and share my wealth with my friends and family. One of my favorite things that I do is, well, once a year, every 2 years, I get my buddies together that couldn't otherwise experience the nonsense that I experience on a regular basis. We go out either to Vegas or we go to the Hard Rock, and I pay for everything. I bring them in, and I've got one rule. You each get $10,000. Gamble your balls off. One rule. If you leave the casino with money, it comes back in my pocket. If you waste it all, great goddamn night. And it's because a lot of people, not a lot, these guys specifically live their life worrying about money every second of every day. I want them to know what it feels like to just be free in hopes that that changes their mindset. But also, I don't want cash to ever be a barrier between me and a friend.
Well, you just said they have to give it to you.
So first
all you did is put all your friends to work.
Only if the money leaves, and believe me, the money never leaves. The money never leaves. Now the dealers hate us.
See, now it'd be better.
Shoot.
May I suggest your next venture?
Yes.
You tell them, here's $10,000 and you get to keep whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Now let's have some fun. And then see how many of them are smart enough not to fucking gamble the 10 G's, because that's the only way to win gambling.
Fair.
Is to not gamble.
Then they won't have any fun the whole night. They'll just put it in their pocket and the night will be over. Sadly.
Well, do you like to gamble? I take it.
I really don't.
Because I mean, if I were your friend and you gave me that, and I knew I had to give you the money anyway, mm-hmm. Well, then I'd just fucking bet it one, you know, 10 grand on red. Now, if I won, I'd be like, fucking let it roll. Let it ride.
And honestly, that's the whole point of it.
Have you ever got a bunch of money back?
Never. Never. I have one person that at the end of the night, one of my longest friends until recently, came to me and was like, hey, I still have $7,000 left. And I said, then go back, drink, spend, buy, do whatever you want. Now you can buy stuff, but you just can't leave with cash. I don't, because if I did what you said, every one of them would go, oh my God, $10,000. I can pay my mortgage for the next year. And then the night's over and they'll just sit there. I want a night of them to be free.
Are these old friends or something?
Old friends. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, Rhett, you know, my old friends, I moved away from my town. So when someone says my old friend, I don't have any old friends anymore. And yeah. Those you can't replace.
You're right. I had one friend from high school, my friend for 33 years, godfather to both my kids, would have died for him, their friendship fell apart about a year ago. But that was my oldest friend.
Yeah, I don't have any. I got some old friends because I'm old. Well, but I'm talking about childhood.
Childhood, yeah. Well, I left my hometown at 20, and it's crazy, and you probably have the same experience. If you go back for a holiday or a reunion, everybody's the same. And a lot of them are dating each other. I swear to God, Brad, I went there, and my high school baseball team, a lot of the guys were still wearing the hats from high school baseball. And so how do you expect to go to that next level if you refuse to even get out of your comfort zone, right?
Been forgetting the bombs, but yeah. You'd think that's common sense, correct?
I think
it's unbelievable to me. I went back to a high school reunion once.
Yep.
And everyone was kind of the same.
It's crazy.
There was this one girl that everyone wanted back in the day, and this one dude got her.
Yeah.
And when I went back, I was like, you know, then I was all bummed because he got her.
Yeah.
Now we're like, thank God he got her.
Thank God.
Everyone was pretty much the same.
Yep.
You know, it was unbelievable. People got to change.
Yes.
And people are almost opposed to change. Why is that?
They're afraid of change.
Why do you think so?
It's unknown. It's uncomfortable. It's scary. What if? That, I hate that. What if? Well, what if it's great? Not what if it's bad? I've always had that mindset. I would, on my deathbed, I will never, ever say, man, I wish I had done that. My mantra is I'll do or try anything twice, because maybe the first time I didn't do it right. Like, so I love life. I love risk. And I understand that my risk profile is off the chart compared to most. But when I talk to young entrepreneurs or people in my life, to me, the risk is not going for it. Like, people, I don't know if you understand this, but we get one ride. You get one chance at this, and you're sitting at home on a Thursday night or a Friday night watching goddamn Netflix series, and you're getting up at 9 and you hate your job and you hate your wife. Change it. Do something different. Anything different. It's not difficult to fundamentally change your life.
Dude, that's right. You'd think more people would understand how easy that is. Because here's what I always try to tell people. Like, you're in a relationship you don't want. You're in a neighborhood you don't want to be in. You're in a job you don't want to be in. Right. But when I say, why don't you quit that and leave that,
right,
they're worried that they won't find anything better. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, how are you afraid to let go of what you don't want to try and reach for something you want? Like, you would think that's just basic.
You would think.
Common sense.
That's right.
And I'm the same way. Like, I've never thought, what if I don't? I always thought, what if I don't try it?
That's right.
And quite frankly, I'm an optimist, 100%. I think.
I have an unrealistic expectation of success. I assume everything I do, I'm going to succeed at. No, that's not necessarily true, but I believe it.
Yeah, me too. My Twitter thing says, lucky as hell and willing to roll the dice. That's me. I'd say I'm as lucky as you can get. One time I got kicked out of a casino for calling 5 roulette numbers in a row. I can call my wife and prove it. I've done it before. People are like, no way. I call her out of the blue. How many times? 5. Dude, it's crazy. They kicked me out. I'm lucky as shit. Always have been. I've tried to put this place out of business. Doesn't seem to work.
I agree. I like to say that I'm the luckiest person in the world. Not always good, but stuff that happens doesn't happen to everybody. Anybody happens to me twice.
Yeah, like this. It's like this episode is going to come out, and someone's going to hear it, and I'm going to get some lucky ass break because I said, "Call me if you want your business." That's right. I'll make sure if anyone calls me, I'll give you a courtesy opt in
2%
if they call me, and you do the same.
Oh, deal.
No, not 2%. 50-50.
Oh, done.
It's your episode.
Handshake.
Deal. Because they'll call me. Yeah. And I'll again. I'm not, and that's greedy.
Agreed.
Like, to me, dude, everything's abundant.
Listen,
there's so much abundance around, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And if you're greedy, people pick up on that.
Well, and not only that, but there's abundance. I can go do 10 more podcasts. Shit, when this drops, all of a sudden that happens, I'll start doing solo podcasts. Hello, everybody. It's Bradley. I've got no treat for you today. Just me talking. But if you're out there needing help, listen, I'm here to help. Call me. My ratings might go down after that, but
hey, you never know.
These listeners, they're called the Bomb Squad.
Hmm.
Dude, I've got very successful people listening. I've got freaking people wanting to be successful. I've got entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, business owners, like real people.
Yeah.
What would you have them do for you if they could? Like, what would be your ask for the Bomb Squad?
What would I have them do for me?
Yeah.
Interesting question. I guess what I'm...
A giving bunch.
We are a giving bunch. Well, I like the 25K per shadow. No, I do have, my main company is 3F Management, right? So we do aggressively invest in promising young entrepreneurs, and more importantly, promising young companies. And so if you have a company or you have a concept that you know that there's more to it, and maybe you're just not sure how to take that next step, 3F Management and myself, we are the team that come in, scale very aggressively, very quickly. We add our C-suite team, our technology, our standard operating procedures, and we get you to where you want to go in an aggressive time period. And as I've mentioned, no one can sell a company for more than I do. I believe that. I've demonstrated it, and I will continue to demonstrate it. So I guess deal flow, right? If I can add value to a company or to an entrepreneur's journey, then either through you or through me, reach out.
Dude, that's good. Guys, DerekFay.com. You can go right direct. You don't have to bother me. But if you do, bring me deals. I'm looking for deals. Derek Fay, at Derek Fay, DERIKFAY, folks. Appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
And as always, until next time, folks, keep that shit real.
Dropping bombs with the real Bradley. Subscribe now.